Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
From 90.9 WBUR, I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston. We continue our coronavirus coverage. It's a Monday with Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, who gives us the latest on the city and its response.
The coronavirus is one of the greatest public health challenges that our city has ever faced. As of today, we have 33 confirmed cases with Boston residents. We expect those numbers to climb.
He'll answer your questions, and so will today's experts on the virus and its spread.
Where are we at in comparison to other countries, like, say, Italy, where it kind of just exploded all of a sudden? How far behind on the calendar are we from that happening to us, possibly?
Plus, we'll bring you President Donald Trump as he updates the nation on the federal response to the growing outbreak. It's all next on WBUR's Radio Boston.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We continue our focus on the coronavirus this week. The latest numbers, there are 164 known presumptive positive coronavirus cases in Massachusetts. 45 have been confirmed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. As of today, there can be no gatherings of 25 or more people in the state. Beginning tomorrow, all schools in the Commonwealth will be closed for the next 3 weeks. And all restaurants and bars will only be able to offer takeout. We're devoting the full hour today to the coronavirus and to taking your questions, beginning with our latest edition of Mondays with the Mayor. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is joining us now, fresh from a press conference. Mayor Walsh, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. This is very unprecedented times that we're living in, and all of the decisions that are being made on a national, statewide, and local levels all across the Commonwealth are difficult decisions, and I appreciate you guys covering this and dedicating the time on the radio, because listeners have questions and concerns, and I think that information is important to get out to as many people as possible.
So you heard the mayor. What are your questions and concerns? He has joined us, is ready to talk. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. Mayor Walsh, I just want to start by asking you, how are you and how are you feeling today?
You know, I'm good. You know, a lot of people second-guessing and double-guessing decisions that are being made, but everything that we're doing is on abundance of caution to try and prevent the spread of this virus. We're at the numbers in Boston today at 33. You mentioned the statewide numbers a little while ago, and I'm expecting those numbers as we get more tests in here to go up. But I think if we can have somewhat of a leveling off of this at some point in the near future, I think we'll get to the recovery piece faster. I think that there's a lot of different industries that are concerned about, for example, the construction industry today. I'm getting calls now in text after we made this announcement saying, the construction industry is going to be crippled. I mean, quite honestly, the coronavirus is crippling a lot of different industries. The stock market's down again today, and I think what we need to do now is stop, focusing on the greater good and the greater population to try and prevent the spread of this virus as best as possible. The decisions that I make or the governor makes, or working with everybody, they're difficult decisions. I mean, a month ago, none of us thought, I didn't think I'd be certainly sitting here talking to you about the coronavirus. I thought we'd be talking about schools and affordable housing and building more housing and lack of supply of housing. I mean, I look forward to getting back to those days where we're working on those issues. But right now it's 100% coronavirus, and it's something that, trying to stay ahead of it and not see what's happening in France and in Italy and other places around the world.
Mayor Walsh, you mentioned construction a minute ago. I think that is, in fact, one of the things that you made an announcement about in the press conference you just came from. Do you want to give our listeners the headlines from that press conference and the messages you delivered?
Basically, as of effective tomorrow, We're going to be suspending all regular activity at construction sites in Boston. All sites should maintain crews. They need to keep the site safe and secure. All sites will be safe from anyone on the site or near the site, so meaning lock up the building and do the best to close it in. Materials that are on the sites on these buildings that are open up top need to be secured from blowing away in the wind. We need to take safety measures should be taken to prevent any type of trespassing. We're allowing this work to be done this the rest of this week. And after the sites have been made safe, skeleton crews will be permitted for the remainder of the suspension. This is not an easy decision, but we're going to be working. We are going to be doing, we'll be allowing to do emergency work on the City of Boston, and that work will be approved by the City of Boston's Inspection Service Department. We're going to prioritize the work that will be happening to keep our neighborhood safe. So as far as emergency repairs, gas leaks and things like that, utility hookups. But it's important. I mean, we have to be concerned about our construction workers as well. The difference here in construction compared to a lot of the other industry is that in other industries, people can work from home and get work done. Construction is not one of those. So.
And Mayor Walsh, have you had any response from the construction industry as yet to that announcement?
We're getting some. We're getting mixed feelings, and that's fine. But my priority is not to gauge on if I'm popular or not. My concern right here is to make sure that we keep the workers safe and keep the virus from spreading. That's ultimately our goal here.
You also had an announcement today about the fund that you worked over the weekend to put together. Would you like to tell us some more about that?
Yeah, we're working on Boston's Resiliency Fund. It's a partnership between a lot of different stakeholders here in the City of Boston. And basically what we want to do is create a fund that's going to be helping. It's a goal that we're trying to get to help. Our main objectives are food access, technology supports for our student learners, and also supports for child care, for healthcare workers and first responders. This is as we move forward. Again, this is a fund that's being created. I'm hoping we don't need this fund. I'm hoping we don't have to tap into this fund. I'm hoping that this moves beyond it. But in the case of food access or support for our children at home, our students from the Boston Public Schools, or healthcare workers for child care, those are the top priorities.
When do you expect the fund to come online, and how will people learn about how to access it, apply, et cetera?
I mean, they can go on City of Boston. I'll get the exact website for you for the fund in a second. But they can go on if they want to go make donations online. And we've already secured almost $9 million.
And you're partnering with a number of private businesses, the Boston Foundation, et cetera.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of folks. I'll get you the list in a minute.
Okay. I also want to ask you, the MBTA announced this afternoon that starting tomorrow, trains and buses are going to run on reduced service. This is based on guidance from the State Department of Health. What's your reaction to this announcement by the T?
I mean, again, I think out of an abundance of caution, the T is cutting back on service. That having less service will obviously affect a lot of businesses in town, including construction. Many construction workers depend on the MBTA to get to and from work. And so I think that the MBTA is making the right call here. Everything we can do right now to on the front end to secure safety is something that we don't have to. If we can limit the amount of coronavirus spread here in Boston and Massachusetts, that's key.
And I also wanted to ask, what about in terms of hospital workers, people who are trying to use public transportation to get to the food centers that you're establishing for families of school students, et cetera?
Yeah, well, we're hopeful that the food access, you won't need the T for that. We're putting it in your neighborhoods. We spread it around the city. So, for example, our 57,000 kids that are accessing food tomorrow in their neighborhoods, it'll either be a community center or another venue that they'll be able to go and pick up their meals. Parents have that information sent home with them today, and we email them as well. So, for example, if you're going to school in Mattapan and you live in Dorchester, you won't have to go to Mattapan or to your school to get access to food. It'll be in your neighborhood. So breaking it down by geography and neighborhoods.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. We've got Francie. Go ahead.
Jump. Before Francie comes on, just real quick.
Yeah.
On the Boston Resiliency Fund, it's boston.gov/resiliency fund. And then the folks that have contributed $1 million and have been helpful, just if you build me for 30 seconds, Jeff Lydon at Vertec Pharmaceutical, Ann Kobensky at Partners Healthcare, Jack Connors, Liberty Mutual, Bain Capital, Gross Family Foundation, Mass Mutual, John and Cindy Fish, and I'd also like to thank Stacia McNaught and Sharon McNally for helping us create the fund, the Shaw Family Foundation, the Boston Foundation, and my team here at City Hall.
And again, that's boston.gov/resiliency fund.
Yes.
All one word?
Yep.
Great. And callers, would love to get some callers from Boston who may have specific questions for the mayor regarding, let's say, bars and restaurants or closings of schools tomorrow, et cetera. I do want to pick up Francie on the line from Milton. Francie, go ahead.
Hi there. And I'm just a mile outside of Boston,
yes.
Milton. Anyway, my question is, are salons and day spas, I have not heard anything about them being included in this. My son's partner works in a salon in New York City, a very high-end day spa, and she is upset because they're expected to come into work.
That's a good question, Francie.
Yeah.
Mayor Walsh, how are you thinking about that?
I don't have the answer on the I don't have the answer. I know that we have in the state, the governor's order was no more than 25 people in a gathering. In our city, we closed down our Boston Center for Youth and Families gyms and basketball courts today and pools. But there has been no, to my knowledge right now, there's been no regulation on that statewide, and there's been none on the city either.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Nancy on the line from Framingham with a pretty important healthcare-oriented question. Nancy, go ahead.
Yes, I'm on dialysis in Framingham, and I'm going to be on dialysis for the rest of my life, three times a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And starting on Thursday of last week, the drivers of transportation, I take private transportation at Chairvan Tuesdays and Thursdays, and the ride on Saturday are not allowed into the facility anymore. The staff members meet us, patients at the door. We patients are in various stages of health or poor health. Some, besides being on dialysis, also are on oxygen.
So, Nancy, what's your question? I'm sorry to be short on time, but what's your question for Mayor Walsh?
What I'm trying to say is that the governor recommends that people, you know, not congregate in groups more than 25, but the number of patients and staff at any one time at the facility are more than 25.
That's a great question. And Mayor Walsh, I mean, the city's hospitals are going to be dealing with similar kinds of questions for people who are getting chronic care. How do we address that?
I think a lot of those hospitals are preparing for that now, so they're going to make arrangements to have what's called community distancing, where there's 5 or 6 feet besides people. I think that at some point, I would suggest that people, if you're going to go in for your doctor's appointment, check with your doctor or the nurse practitioner or whoever you're calling to make sure your appointments are still on.
And Mayor Walsh, I kind of want to stay on the healthcare question for a minute. You know, we are seeing some concerning reports that Massachusetts hospitals are not or may not be ready for the kind of influx of patients that could be coming. And, of course, Boston, the city itself, is a hospital-rich environment. Do you have concerns about the shape of the curve as it comes and whether we've got the capacity, and what can the city do to work with hospitals to increase that capacity or ensure that there is capacity there?
I mean, I think we're all concerned about the curve, and we're all concerning because we have no idea what the high point's going to be. And I think that, you know, hospitals are working really diligently right now to be able to be prepared for whatever number of patients they think potentially will have to go into hospital. It's the same thing as in the city. You know, we're literally systematically going through different departments and seeing, you know, who can work from home, who has to be here, what are the essential opportunities. You know, some people have said we should just shut City Hall down. We can't just shut City Hall down because we provide critical functions. And I think that as we move forward here, I mean, I think that as every day goes by, we're more prepared for handling whatever crisis might come. But I think there's still a very fluid situation, and people are still trying to make sure we have all the things in preparation. I can say this for the city. We're offering any support to the hospitals and to the state that's needed. If we can be helpful in a particular case or situation that they need help in, whatever that might be, we're here to help.
Let's stay on that for a second. Here's Dr. Peter Slavin. He's the president of Mass General Hospital. This was him on NBC's Meet the Press this weekend.
Our supplies are low. I hear from hospitals around our region and around our country that their supplies are low, and we need the federal government to engage in a Manhattan Project to get industry to create surgical masks, eye protection devices, right, gowns, so that our healthcare workers can engage in this battle. We wouldn't want to send soldiers into war without helmets and armor. we don't want to do the same with our healthcare workers.
So, Mayor Walsh, I'm thinking about the level of mobilization you've done in the last couple of days on the Resiliency Fund. So many major contributors, a tremendous amount of money in a short amount of time. What is the equivalent of that to make sure that hospitals are supplied, healthcare workers have childcare, you know, the necessary equipment is in place? And
I think there's a couple different things there that we have to, the way I look at it, I think when it comes to childcare, obviously the Resiliency Fund can be helpful. I think with Dr. Slavin, he's been a tremendous help here in the city of Boston to us here. I've talked to him several times this weekend, making sure that the equipment that they need is there, and that it's not being diverted somewhere else. And I think that that's a different kind of situation. If we can help Dr. Slavin and the hospital providers with that, we will. I think when it comes to capacity, as far as having people inpatient, that's another thing we can try and be helpful there with the state. With the hospitals. I think when it comes to capacity and potentially doing more and more testing, that's where we can jump in. We have large pieces of land that we could set up tents and really think about helping the testing along with our health center. So I think there's a lot there, and we've been working with the hospital providers and in some cases following their lead, and then offering them the assistance. Anything we can do to be helpful.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Peggy on the line from Jamaica Plain. Peggy, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was wondering, with the school closures, if the Boston school bus drivers will still be transporting youngsters to their medical appointments from the Early Learning Center and other Boston public schools.
Probably, I'm not sure the answer to that, Peggy. I'll have to check in. I wasn't aware that was happening, but the bus drivers have been great. They offered and things that we need them to help us with. We have to talk to them and work with them, so they offered to help us with food and other things. I'm not sure as far as medical appointments. I'd have to look into that. I don't have an answer for you on that one.
So, Mayor Walsh, the Boston Public Schools do close tomorrow. What kind of response are you getting from families, especially those worried about childcare and being able to continue to work? And what advice or options do you have for them from the city?
I think, a lot of parents are just concerned about what's happening. Every time they turn on the TV or pick up the newspaper, they're focused on the coronavirus. I think every day, as every day goes by, more and more parents are home with their children. Employers are allowing people to work from home. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, Boston, I'm looking out my window now here at City Hall, and there's only a couple people I see walking through Faneuil Hall. When on a normal Monday, there's hundreds of people. And I think that there are more and more people adhering to the recommendations of trying to stay home and with each other and not contact with other folks. I think the advice I'd have is just as you think about parents, having birthday parties and things like that, I would say that's probably not the best thing to do at this particular moment, because we're still in the prevention stage of trying to prevent the spread of the virus. I'd also suggest that, if you have elderly parents or their grandparents, be very careful, but that, you're keeping distance so that we don't, older population is more vulnerable to the coronavirus and further implications. So we want to make sure that we're keeping people safe, and that's really important. And, read as much information on it as you can.
Let's grab a call from Sue in Roxbury now. Sue, you're on the line with Mayor Marty Walsh.
Hi, good afternoon, Mayor. This is Sue. I'm calling. I work at Project Hope in Boston, right in Roxbury, Dorchester.
I know it well, on Dudley Street.
Yes, sir. And although we are unfortunately needing to close our actual building beginning tomorrow so that folks are not able to come in through the building, we are wanting people to know that we are there for them. We have our phone number up on our website, an email address, et cetera. Some of the things that people want to access could necessitate Wi-Fi, internet access, and many of our participants, our program participants, do not have that. Can you say a little bit about some of the services that the city can put in place so that more of our participants are able to access what we can provide through internet resources?
Yes, thank you for that. That was one of the biggest challenges I had with closing libraries down is that many people use libraries to access the internet, get their news from the library. And when we had a long discussion this morning about whether or not to keep it open on a limited basis, and ultimately we came down on the side of closing it. In saying that, we're working with our IT department, working with a lot of the providers to have our Wicked Free Wi-Fi. It's installed in some communities where people can access internet services, and we're also working to see how we can get broader internet services across low-income communities that don't have it, because we want to get as much information to those folks as possible. So that's still a fluid situation. We're still working on it, and I would expect us to be making announcements on things like that in the coming days.
So, Mayor Walsh, just to clarify for our listeners, the Boston Public Library Network will be closing. Is that correct?
It will be closing as of 6 o'clock tonight.
All right. The other thing that I know last week when we talked you were concerned about is if you closed schools, that 78% of the young people in the schools qualify and receive free breakfast and lunch or subsidized breakfast and lunch. You have put a plan in place. Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about that plan and how you can execute it while maintaining social distancing?
Yeah, our plan's in place. We've identified spots in neighborhoods that in communities that our young people live in that will be beginning that food service tomorrow. We'll be posting, we're asking people to 6 feet apart when they come to pick up the meals, going into whether it's they're all buildings, but different sites, and they're set up differently. Some have bigger spaces than others. We're also going to be passing out information on the coronavirus to all the parents and children that come tomorrow in several different languages, so we can get it out to different communities, and that's something that's important.
You know, in the time we have left, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Mayor Walsh, was sort of the staggering that's happened between the city of Boston and the state on various announcements and changes in policy. So, for example, you were ahead of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in determining that you wanted to close the Boston public schools. You closed them for longer when Governor Charlie Baker announced the Massachusetts-wise closing. It was shorter. At one point, you were concerned about gatherings of more than 50 people. Then Governor Baker came out with gatherings of more than 25 people. How are you working to coordinate with the state? And is it important to be in sync with the state, or is this a time where cities and towns you think should be out front?
No, I think there's going to be times like yesterday with the hotels and bar rooms when we came out with a proposal and the governor came out with a different proposal a few hours later. I think that's going to happen. People have to understand that we're working in many different areas and many different silos, if you will, on different issues, and there's not always going to be able to reflect and have the long extended conversation about what should be right. We'd be done.
But that does seem like that's really hard on people, Mayor Walsh, to have these
I think everything's hard on people, and I think as long as we don't spin it as disconnect, I think we're okay with that. And I think that, you know, this is something that has never happened in our lifetime before. We're talking about a worldwide global epidemic that we're working on here, and we're trying to move as best we can forward. And I think, you know, when you think about Boston, I'm dealing with, you know, 28, 29, 30 different neighborhoods, and the governor's working on 351 different cities and towns. So, I mean, I think that we have to just continue to move forward here. And at the end of the day, it's about making sure the residents of our city and the Commonwealth are safe and protected, and that they have the services that they need. This is nothing that any elected official wanted to wake up to and have this situation staring us in the face like it is. And I think that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we're going to continue to work as best we can in getting information out and be on the same page. There's going to be a time where information might be a little confused. But in yesterday's case with the bars and restaurants, we came out with a policy that was a policy that we thought through and thought might have been a good response to what we saw with lines at St. Patrick's Day. And the governor came out with a stronger policy. And I think that at the end of the day, it's about keeping people safe.
I do want to ask you one more question. You've called on the city to be Boston strong again. What do you expect and most need from the residents of Boston right now?
Just to keep an eye, look out for each other, work together. I know, and you know, patience is important for all of us as we all continue to have a changing world that we live in right now. And for the folks that are at home that are concerned and scared, I want you to know that there are thousands of people that love you and care about you and that are working on your behalf. So if you need to get connected to information, please call the City of Boston at 311 or go to the City of Boston website, boston.gov, and that we're going to get through this. We're all going to get through this, and we're going to be stronger for it.
That is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Dearing. We continue taking your calls on the coronavirus this week. What do you want to know? What are your questions and what do you need answered? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Joining us on the line today to help answer your questions is Dr. Benjamin Linus. He's an infectious disease physician and an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Linus.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to support our community in what's really turning into a challenging time.
We're happy to have you. Also on the line is an infectious disease epidemiologist, Nadia Abuelazam, an assistant professor at Boston College's William F. Connell School of Nursing. Nadia, hello there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to start with Dr. Linus. A couple of questions I want to ask about hospitals. Dr. Linus, what is it like at the hospital right now?
So I can only speak for my hospital. I work at Boston Medical Center. Boston Medical Center is in full response mode now. We have various sort of levels of elevation, and we're up to our third level, which is our highest level of activation. I can tell you that...
I'm sorry, just let me stop you there for a second. What does that mean, your highest level of activation? What does that
mean
for the hospital?
Well, we sort of phase, without going into all the details, we phase in as things become... As crises arise, we sort of ramp up our response as a crisis evolves, and we're at full-out activation at this point. So I can tell you that since sometime last week, I have done nothing but thinking about this process in emergency meetings. We're putting together and improving our protocols and really, we've seen the data in Italy. We've seen the data in Wuhan. We know what this curve looks like if we don't act now. And we're preparing for the worst and acting hard to try to prevent that.
And Dr. Linus, do we know, we have heard a lot about estimates of the fatality rate of the coronavirus. Do we know what the rate of hospitalization is among people who are infected?
Can you repeat that? It kicked out there at a critical moment of your question.
I'm sorry about that. Do we know? We know about the fatality rate, or we're learning about that as we go along. Do we know about the rate of hospitalization for the infection?
Well, I think it's very hard to know what the rate of hospitalization is if you don't really understand the total problem in the community. So I can tell you that we're beginning to see cases in our hospital. We're beginning to see persons under investigation in our hospital. We're beginning to fill up with cases that are under investigation.
Dr. Linus, I am so sorry to interrupt you. It's just come in my ear that President Trump is addressing the nation now, and we need to take a break to take that coverage. I apologize to both of you. I hope you can both hang on. So we're going to turn now to live coverage of President Donald Trump.
You know, some places in our nation that are not very affected at all, but we may look at certain areas, certain hot spots, as they call them. We'll be looking at that, but at this moment, no, we're not.
The second question is, you said you had your coronavirus test Friday night. The White House doctor's office put out a statement around midnight Friday saying that no test was indicated. So when exactly was your test administered?
Well, I had my test. It was late Friday night, and the reason I did it was because I had no symptoms whatsoever. So the doctor said, you have no symptoms, so we don't see any reason. But when I did the press conference on Friday, everybody was going crazy. Did you do the test? Did you do the test? So very late on Friday night, I did the test. And he may have put out, or the doctor may have put out something at I don't know what time the letter went out. Maybe it was put out by somebody else. But the results came back, I believe, the following day. And we tested negative.
But the question is, how could the White House doctor's office say a test wasn't indicated, implying that you hadn't had one when, in fact, you had?
Well, I told them that, and I went totally by what they said, the doctors, more than one. They said you don't have any of the symptoms. They checked what you're supposed to check and that I didn't have symptoms. But I did it. I did a test late on Friday night, and it came back probably 24 hours later or something. They sent it to the labs, came back later. Yeah, please.
Mr. President, you had a teleconference with the nation's governors today.
Yeah.
And in that teleconference, you told them if they need things like respirators or masks to try to get it on their own. What did you mean by that, and what will the federal government do to help?
If they can get them faster by getting them on their own, in other words, go through a supply chain that they may have, because the governors, you know, during normal times, the governors buy a lot of things, not necessarily through federal government. If they're able to get ventilators, respirators, if they're able to get certain things without having to go through the longer process of federal government, we have stockpiles now, and we're ordering tremendous numbers of ventilators, respirators, masks. And they're ordered, and they're coming, and we have quite a few. At this point, I think, Mike, we have a lot. But if they can get them directly, it's always going to be faster if they can get them directly, if they need them. And I've given them authorization to order directly.
Go ahead, please. Mr. President, one of the big weaknesses in our healthcare system is surge capacity for medical facilities. And I wanted to ask, what precautions, what planning is being done to get China was able to build hospitals in a matter of days. Are you prepared to use the Corps of Engineers or FEMA to start building surge capacity that we may need in a couple of weeks?
Well, first of all, we hope we don't get there, and that's what we're doing, and that's why we're taking a very strict look at this. But we also are looking at areas, and not only looking, we're expanding certain areas. We're taking over buildings that aren't used. We're doing a lot in that regard. We hope we don't have to get there, but we are doing a lot in that regard.
Could you clarify something? These guidelines say stay home if you're sick. Yesterday, the vice president said no one should worry about losing a paycheck if they stay home when they're sick. But the House bill exempts companies of 500 employees or more from the paid sick leave requirement, and that's 54% of the American workplace. Why is it a good idea to only require small businesses to provide paid
sick? We're looking at that, and we may be expanding that. We are looking at that. We want fairness. We want it for everybody. No, we're looking at that through the Senate, because, as you know, the Senate is now digesting that bill. So we may very well be adding something on that. Okay? Good question.
President, one going off of what he was asking, how many ventilators and how many ICU beds do we have right now, and will it be enough?
I could get back to you with that number. We've ordered a lot. We have quite a few, but it may not be enough. And if it's not enough, we will have it by the time we need it. Hopefully, we won't need them.
And you'll give us the exact number?
Yeah, we'll be able to give you.
So far, they have not given us an exact
number. We'll give you. We can give you a number. If it's important, we'll give you a number. Go ahead.
Okay. And yesterday, you said that this was under tremendous control. Do you want to revisit that statement if we are going to be experiencing this until July or August, 5 more months? Ahead of
I'm talking about control, I'm saying we are doing a very good job within the confines of what we're dealing with. We're doing a very good job. There's been a tremendous amount of the way they're working together. They're working hand in hand. I think they're doing really a great job. And from that standpoint, that's what I was referring to. Yes,
not, you're not saying it's under control, right?
I'm not referring to it, meaning the. Yeah, if you're talking about the virus, no, that's not under control for any place in the world. I think
yes,
I read.
You said it was.
I think I read. No, I didn't. I was talking about what we're doing is under control, but I'm not talking about the virus. Yes, please.
The stock market took another hit today. Is the U.S. economy heading into a recession?
Well, it may be. We're not thinking in terms of recession. We're thinking in terms of the virus. Once we stop, I think there's a tremendous pent-up demand, both in terms of the stock market and in terms of the economy. And once this goes away, once it goes through and we're done with it, I think you're going to see a tremendous surge.
Are you looking at any domestic travel restrictions? I know that's been on the table before, but is that firming up at all?
We're not really. We hope we don't have to, Steve. We think that hopefully we won't have to do that. But it's certainly something that we talk about every day. We haven't made that decision.
Can I ask you, doctors and nurses in this country are telling us across the board that they're terrified of this virus, of the fact that they might get it, of the fact that they might take it home to their families. What can you say to assure healthcare providers in this country that the federal government is doing something today to ensure that they get personal protective equipment to protect themselves and their families?
Well, I think the federal government is doing everything that we can possibly do. We made some very good early decisions by keeping people out, by keeping countries out, certain countries where the infection was very immense. I noticed a lot of people are talking about South Korea because they've done a good job on one side, but on the other side, tremendous problems at the beginning. They had tremendous problems and great numbers of death. I think that we've done a fantastic job from just about every standpoint. With that being said, you look, no matter where you look, this is something. It's an invisible enemy. And but we are speaking all the time, not only with the people, but also the professional people, the nurses, the doctors. They have been doing a fantastic job. We are also working very much on getting them the kind of equipment that they need. And for the most part, they either have it or they will be getting it. But remember this. We want the governors, we want the mayors, we want them locally from a local standpoint because it can go quicker. We want them to work. And we had a great talk with the governors today. I think it was a really great talk. There's a tremendous coordination. There's a tremendous spirit that we have together with the governors. And that's pretty much, for the most part, bipartisan, yeah.
Mr. President, you told John that you think this could wash through, as you said, July, August. You just told Steve when he asked you about a possibility of recession, you said it may be. I'm curious, if there is a recession, when do you think that might hit?
Well, I don't number one, determine recession. I just say this. We have an invisible enemy. We have a problem that a month ago nobody ever thought about. Nobody in I've read about it. I read about many years ago, 1917, 1918. I've seen all of the different problems similar to this that we've had. This is a bad one. This is a very bad one. This is bad in the sense that it's so contagious. It's just so contagious, sort of record-setting type contagion. The good part is the young people are they do very well, and healthy people do very well. Very, very bad for older people, especially older people with problems. My focus is really on getting rid of this problem, this virus problem. Once we do that, everything else is going to fall into place. Yes, please.
A lot of rumors last night that you were going to put in a national curfew,
yeah,
or some kind of, you know, text.
I've been reading. I've been watching.
Right, exactly. Me too. Your people were saying this is a foreign disinformation campaign. Is that what's going on? Are people messing with us on the internet?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that I can't tell you if they are or not. And I think a lot of the media actually has been very fair. I think people are pulling together on this. I really think the media has been very fair. I think it could be that you have some foreign groups that are playing games, but it doesn't matter. We haven't really determined to do that at all, and hopefully we won't have to. That's a very big step. It's a step we can take, but we have not decided to do it. Jennifer, go.
Mr. President, two things, one on airlines and one,
yes,
on Jeff Bezos. Can you talk a little bit specifically about what you'd like to do to help the airlines, first of all? And then second of all, we heard that Jeff Bezos has been in contact with the White House daily. Can you say what he's been asking for or proposing?
Well, I've heard that's true. I don't know that for a fact, but I know that some of my people have, as I understand it, been dealing with them or with him, and that's nice. We've had tremendous support from a lot of people that can help, and I believe he was one of them. As far as the airlines are concerned, the airlines, we're going to back the airlines 100%. It's not their fault. It's nobody's fault, unless you go to the original source, but it's nobody's fault. And we're going to be in a position to help the airlines very much. We've told the airlines we're going to help them.
They want $25 million, but we're going to be helping.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we had interrupted Radio Boston for a few minutes to bring you some live coverage of President Donald Trump at a press conference this afternoon, updating the nation on the government's response to the coronavirus. Before we went to that live coverage, we had just started a conversation and taking your calls on the virus and the outbreak. Our two guests stayed with us, thankfully. The first is Dr. Benjamin Linus, an infectious disease physician, an associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Thanks for staying with us, Dr. Linus.
It was my pleasure.
And Nadia Abuelazam, an infectious disease epidemiologist and assistant professor at the School of Nursing at Boston College, also stayed with us. Thank you, Nadia, for doing so. I appreciate it.
Of course.
So obviously, we're going to adjust the rest of the hour based on taking that break for the president. I want to start now by asking the two of you for reactions to what you just heard from a public health standpoint, from a medicine standpoint. And Nadia, why don't I welcome you to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I take issue with the phrase invisible enemy that the president used a number of times. I think it's really important to remember that this is a disease that's real. It's physical, it's embodied, it's visible, and the reality is that we know exactly how to deal with this from a public health perspective. So by calling it something invisible, I think it takes away our responsibility and our ability to address this as a nation and as many communities here in the United States.
And Dr. Linus, what is your reaction to what we heard from the president?
Well, at this moment, I'm trying to separate my sort of personal political thoughts versus sort of public health knowledge. And I think what I really want to focus on is the public health message he's giving. And I do take issue because I feel that at this moment, what we need to be focused on is social distancing and flattening the curve. I think everybody's heard those messages or likely are beginning to hear those messages. And I want to repeat them because it's critically important. Now, now is the time that we need to be doing this. We've seen what's happened in other countries. The curve explodes exponentially. It's not a surprise. It's basic epidemiology. And now is the time to react. And then we have a leader of the country who tends to play this down and say, yeah, you know, they said I didn't need the test, but I got the test. That's not helping us. That's not helping our system. It's not helping our city. It's not helping me when I go to the hospital, and it's not helping my family when I come home.
And that's
why I'm getting upset.
What is, to both of you, before we take a quick break and then start picking up calls, what is the message that you think is most important to be hearing from leaders at the local, state, and national level right now? Nadia, why don't you go first?
I think it's exactly what Dr. Linus just mentioned. Everyone needs to take social distancing. Now some people are calling it physical distancing really seriously and know that it has the potential to change this pandemic, to change this epidemic. And I think if people understand that they can sort of in some ways take this into their own hands and be responsible for a part of this, that should empower people to make those changes today.
Dr. Linus, what would you add?
I would add to that one thing, and I appreciate that subtle difference between social distancing and physical distancing, because what I wanted to say is that actually, when we do social distancing, we're doing social solidarity. This is something that we're doing together. We're putting physical distance between ourselves, but we're working together across society as a team to end this. And I find that very powerful. I actually get emotional about it. I think that it's a really powerful thing to think about, that we could come out of the backside of this actually a much stronger society with much bigger and stronger bonds between us. Because how often is it that we actually, across our entire society, work together to do something? And that's what we have to do right now.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are continuing our coronavirus coverage this week by taking your calls. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your questions of our two panelists who are still with us, Dr. Benjamin Linus of the Boston University School of Medicine and Assistant Professor Nadia Abuelazam at Boston College's William F. Cannell School of Nursing. Both are epidemiologists. I thank you both for staying with us, and I'm actually going to jump right into a call. We've got Mary on the line from Sudbury. Mary, go ahead.
Hello, doctor and guests. I am a little worried. My daughter is due to have a baby in 2 to 3 days, and she's supposed to go to Brigham and Women's Hospital, where the news has already said there's been a couple of staff infected with corona. I'm trying to reassure my daughter that Brigham and Women's is going to move heaven and earth and keep that maternity unit spotless. But she's very doubtful. Is there anything we can know that will be reassuring to her?
Oh, Mary, I feel for you. Let's turn to Dr. Linus for that.
Sure, absolutely. I feel for you, too. It's difficult, I know. But I think that I can be reassuring. I think that I have absolute confidence that what you're telling your daughter is right, that no hospital in Boston is contemplating co-mixing their COVID-19 sort of wards and patients with their maternity wards, that we understand the idea of infection control. We have infection control for many different infections that don't make such a splash in the news every day. We know how to do this, and we're continuing to do this. And, you know, this is where to go for delivery in the United States in the year 2020, and that's where she needs to go, and we will take care of her. I have full faith in Brigham and Women's.
Thank you for that. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to call with your question. Shay is on the line from Quincy. Shay, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just have a question about the president saying that he's asymptomatic, so he doesn't need a test. Why aren't we focusing on the people that are asymptomatic who could have this disease and who could be spreading it more than we know? Why is the focus not on that?
Great question, Shay. Nadia, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, Dr. Linus may want to jump in here, but I do think that the sentiment is exactly right. We do need to be expanding our testing strategies. Unfortunately, I just don't think there are enough tests to go around at the moment to be focusing on asymptomatic cases, even though I think that's completely right. We need to make sure that we are testing everyone, regardless of whether or not they're showing symptoms.
Dr. Linus, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that's a great answer, and that's exactly right. The root cause of this problem is there aren't enough tests. Right. And it's dumbfounding at times to understand how we're in this place. But at this point, we don't have enough tests, and we are prioritizing getting tests done in the hospital for patients who are under care now, who are suspect cases or persons under investigation, but we don't yet have a diagnosis. And we don't have capacity to go out and start doing asymptomatic screening.
And Dr. Linus, do you anticipate that there's a time coming up where you're going to feel like we are sufficiently able to test at the rate we should be able to?
Yes, I'm confident that we will get there. I'm not able to tell you when, because the goalpost has been moving consistently by a couple days or a week every day for the last couple of weeks. So new commercial labs are online. That's very encouraging. Another commercial lab came online today that's now available on the East Coast. That should increase our capacity. I think that we are getting there, and I'm fully confident that we'll be there, but I can't tell you exactly when.
Let's take another call. We've got John on the line calling from 93 North. Hope your hand's free there. John, go ahead.
Yes, I am, and thank you for taking my call. My concern this afternoon is that I work in an atmosphere right now where many of the people don't believe that this is, you know, a real thing or that it's being blown out of proportion. How can I go about convincing people that COVID-19 is worth, worth investing in physical distancing, worth, you know, maybe not going to work for a little while? How do I go about maybe convincing people of that?
And John, I really appreciate you already echoing back that phrase of physical distancing. That's fantastic. Nadia, let me turn that over to you.
I'm struggling with this in my own social circles. I think it's really important to remember that we have examples in China and Korea and Italy where things have gone really wrong. We've seen a large amount of deaths in these other countries. And I think it's really about getting the reaction right. And I think, you know, Dr. Fauci just made a statement earlier today that I would rather overreact than not act at all. And I think that that's really the way that we need to get people to start thinking about this, that yes, this may seem like an overreaction right now, but that's because we're at the very beginning of this thing and we haven't seen the worst yet. And I don't know if that's going to convince people, but that's the messaging I've been trying to maintain, especially with my social circle.
Let's take a call from David in Framingham. David, what's your question for the panelists?
I'm just wondering what they're doing at places like Angel Memorial, where, you know, there's a big emotional thing. I know they've canceled
Animal
non-emergent.
Hospital, right? Just to be clear for our listeners.
Right. But there's like 100 people working there. And, you know, you're talking about a situation where a lot of people could be coming in and dealing with the emotional problem of having an emergent case. I'm a veterinarian. We've canceled regular appointments. We're here picking up animals in the parking lot and bringing them in and seeing clients by FaceTime. But I'm just wondering how they're planning on dealing with situations where, you know, emotions are going to get in the way and there's still going to be a large number of people congregating.
That's a great question, David. And I'm going to add a second piece to it and then turn it to Dr. Linus. We actually had a listener write in earlier also asking if the fur on pets and animals, if you have somebody pet the fur on your pet or animal, does that make them a possible transfer of the virus to another human? So that's a lot I know lumped in. But Dr. Linus, let me turn to you on those.
Sure. So I'll take the second half that you added first, because I can give a clear answer to that. No.
Okay.
The WHO has looked at this. Pets are not a source of transmission, and I don't think that people should be worried about that.
Correct.
I do think that we're in a period of physical distancing, and so probably there shouldn't be a lot of people in your home petting your pet, nor should there be a lot of people approaching you on the street to pet your pet. So you probably shouldn't find yourself in that position at this point anyway, but I want to reassure people that pets are not a source of disease. I can't comment on the approaches at Angel Memorial, not being a veterinarian. I can absolutely empathize with the problem. I think it's very parallel to the problem we're having at, you know, human hospitals, but I don't have expert knowledge on Angel.
And what advice would either of you have for providing for and supporting the social and emotional well-being of frontline and healthcare workers who are feeling the strain of this minute by minute? Nadia.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a whole community, we have to begin to support each other, to reach out to people, make sure that they have the proper support that they need. I think a lot of healthcare workers are going to be really strained, overworked, perhaps working over hours. And I think reaching out and making sure that we're providing emotional support to those people who may be in our social circles, may not be in our social circles, I think that that's going to be a really crucial thing in the coming days.
All right. There are a lot of calls waiting that we are not going to get to. So listeners, we will continue to do this week. If we don't get you today, we can get you later this week, any day this week. Feel free to call in. Dr. Lennis, just very quickly, on behalf of one of our listeners, she was calling to say, what about being outside, biking, jogging, walking? Isn't that a healthy practice or is that dangerous, especially for older adults? 30 seconds or so.
Yep, absolutely. That's a healthy practice. We're not saying to lock yourself in your house. We're just saying to have physical distancing from the people around you. Going outside is a wonderful thing to do. I'm very grateful the weather has been good. I encourage people to go outside and do their normal activities. Just stay around 6 feet away and stay away from large crowds.
All right. And that is Dr. Benjamin Linus, infectious disease physician and associate professor of medicine and epidemiology at the Boston University School of Medicine. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And infectious disease epidemiologist Nadia Abuelazam, who is also an assistant professor at Boston College's William F. Cannell School of Nursing. Nadia, great to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Keep calling and join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.